So, I'm so f***ed up. I don't know when this is gonna end. I have another 40 miles to ride. Like, what the f***?
This is the Bike Pack Racing Podcast with Ezra Ward Packard and Andrew Onerma. Welcome back to the Bike Pack Racing Podcast. This is episode 30. I am Ezra Ward Packard. I'm with Andrew Onerma, as always, sometimes not as always, but he's here. Exciting day today. A few weeks ago, I gave a little shout out to who I said was the current best American bike pack racer. He's blushing right now. But with FKTs like the Trans Virginia, Trans North Georgia, and most recently the Arkansas High Country Race, Abe Kaufman, you are the best American bike pack racer right now. I just got to give it to you, man.
Oh boy. Oh, well, I'll take it for now, sure, but I don't know. Might be some folks that disagree with that.
So you say that, but just like looking at this past year, like I'm very obsessed with these things, right? And it's like I don't like want to ever create a ranking system, but I'm always like, you know, who are the players? And you're like at that very, very top of the list with these results. So
boy. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So first order of business. We don't do video, but it looks like you got something going on with the wrist. If you follow Abe on Strava, he hasn't been active the 3 days. Abe, what's going on?
So I rode the Tour Divide in 2022. And I guess last summer, so it's been about a year and a half, I've just been dealing with some ongoing hand issues, you know, the classic sort of cyclist numbness and the pinky and ring finger. And I've had a couple of falls on my left hand and just been dealing with some nerve issues, ulnar nerve stuff in that left hand. And, you know, along with long days in the saddle and, you know, a lot of time holding on handlebars, my hands have just kind of taken a beating. So I went to see a couple of specialists and they recommended getting basically sort of an ulnar nerve release surgery done. So I had that done on Thursday, just 3 days ago now. So I figured the off season's a good time to sort of heal up, recuperate, you know, get your body kind of squared away. And it's been, you know, it was a real struggle trying to decide whether that was the right thing to do or not have surgery. It's a big deal, right? Anytime you get operated on. But I've just been struggling with numbness in both hands, but it's been a lot worse in the left hand. So, you know, went ahead and had that procedure done to help relieve the tension on that nerve. So yeah, I'm sitting here in a splint right now with my hand kind of bandaged up, eager to get back on the bike again. But be taking a little bit of time off here this winter, kind of hopefully doing some skiing here once I get this thing, get my hand squared away a little more and get back behind the, you know, band of handlebars in maybe a month or so. So
yeah, I'm sorry to hear about that, dude. At the same time, like that is like honestly a topic that definitely comes up over and over and over again, which is that numbness in the hands. Is it just one hand you got the surgery done, like left or right?
It's sort of like both hands could potentially be done, but left was a lot worse. You know, I'd actually had lost a fair bit of strength in the left hand. My grip strength and finger strength was about 50% of my right hand. So figured it was time to get that done. And it's just like, you know, this ultra racing world, man, it takes its toll on your body. Ezra, you've been there. I'm sure Andrew, you have too, man. It's sort of like when you're pushing hard, you know, there's there's some consequences, but boy, is it fun.
On a really basic level, do you think it's just the fact that you're doing everything with your right hand on the bike? Like you're eating snacks, you're reaching for a bottle, you're always have your left hand on for the most part. Do you think correlation to it?
Well, it's more related. I'm actually left-handed, so I'm left hand dominant. And I've, you know, taken lots of OTB wrecks over the years, and for whatever reason, I tend to fall on my left hand more than my right. And so actually, like the week before the divide, I was mountain biking last summer, and I took a just a little like slow speed over the bars wreck and like landed, you know, one of the bars landed on my hand right on a rock and hit a rock right on the pad of my palm, and like it shot my whole hand numb. And so I think that sort of like set me up, sort of a blunt force little trauma to that area of the palm where that ulnar nerve passes through. And then, you know, going riding for 15 and a half days straight last summer, it was actually okay on the Tour Divide. Didn't really have too many issues. Towards the end, you know, had the classic like numbness and tingling in the fingers. And, but I think just the culmination of, you know, sort of taking some spills and that kind of stuff has had set the left hand up to be worse than the right. I don't know.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's definitely a major issue with these sorts of races. Like, I don't remember the name, but he, for a while there, held one of the directions on the Colorado Trail Race. He's been on Payson's podcast before, and he kind of just like straight up came out and was like, I'm done doing these ultra endurance bike pack mountain bike races just because I'm a rock climber. And if I can't use my hands for months after doing these efforts, it's not worth it. I went to a screen.
Giacome, is that his name?
Yes.
Something like Giacome. I'm probably butchering the pronunciation, but it's something.
And then recently I went to a screening of The Divide, which is Lachlan's Morton's films in Boulder. And that was one of the things that he brought up is that he still like has like the tingling sensation in his fingers. Like after The Divide this year, like for me, it was about a month to a month and a half. And this is like me trying to do all the things to just, you know, like stretch it and do the cat eye sort of like weird finger stretches and like, you know, not wearing a camelback to take the weight off the shoulders and all those things. And it's, you know, between that and Schirmer's neck, which is when you can no longer hold your head up. Like those are the two things that I just see like pop up over and over and over again. It really is like the hand one is scary. Like that's a scary one. Schirmer's neck comes back quickly, but the hands, that's pretty crazy, man.
Yeah, it takes a long time. You know, Jens van Roost last year, 2022, scratched in the Tour Divide. He was right up there, top three, four. You know, he just couldn't hang onto the handlebars after 10, 11 days. You know, he was just like, I'm done, can't do it. And I actually had messaged him. I talked to a bunch of people. You know, I like to do my research. And I just, like I said, I really struggled with the decision to get the surgery done. But it's something I've been dealing with for about a year and a half now. And it's just like, just decide, talk to a couple people, a couple specialists, and went to occupational therapists. And it's like, you know, this is kind of what we recommend to help get that strength back. So I'm hoping, you know, next year is a little bit up in the air right now, you know, like seeing what, how things will unfold this winter and, you know, how my body recovers. But I'm really, you know, eager to get back out there and keep racing, you know. It's so nice.
How do you feel about the indoor trainer? Are you someone that avoids it, or do you use it as a tool in times like this?
Yeah, I use it, you know, not a huge fan. I don't know, some people are, I guess. I'm not a huge fan, but it certainly is a useful tool for keeping active. I have a desk job, you know, so I sit behind a desk, you know, 40 hours a week. And so whatever can allow me to, you know, in this cold, dark winter months, allow me to, you know, burn off some steam, I'm certainly open to a trainer. And it is a good, I put some aero bars on my trainer actually before the surgery, and I haven't gotten on back yet, but yeah, hoping to spend some time on the trainer here this winter. And, you know, just to keep moving, keep the blood flowing and keep active a little bit. It's, I don't know, it's tough.
Yeah, it is.
Nice, so, man. I'm curious, let's just like wind the clock back to like, when did you first get into this ultra endurance scene? Were you a big cyclist before then, or was this kind of where you really jump in the deep end?
Sure. Yeah. I love to talk about biking, my history. So I started, I got my bike the week I got a desk job back in 2007. I was, I guess, in my mid-20s at the time, and I had an outside job. I was working for a land surveying company, so I was out in the mountains, out in the woods, you know, on my feet all day. And I got this job behind a desk and was like, oh my gosh, I got to do something to keep my body active. And so I bought a mountain bike back in 2007, and I've really been, I was really just a recreational mountain biker. We have great riding here around the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia, where I live. Great road riding too, but for years I was just primarily a recreational mountain biker, single track, you know, just riding all kinds of good rocky technical single track, old hand-built, you know, hiking trails basically that, you know, people use for mountain biking now. So you're either kind of riding straight up or descending straight down. Spent, I don't know, I guess 12, 13, 14 years just kind of biking, just recreationally mountain biking. And then, I guess kind of around the time of the pandemic back in 2020, or I guess it was a little bit before even 2019, I sort of discovered there was a bike packing race that starts in Harrisonburg and ends in Roanoke, two cities here in the Chenault Valley. It's like a 280 mile sort of primarily mountain bike, pretty heavy in the single track aspect, maybe 45,000 feet of climbing. So that was an event that started from basically just right down the road from where I live. And I was like, I heard people doing it, you know, I'd been around for a year or two before I got wind of it. And I was like, this sounds insane. It sounds really wild, but I'd like to give this a shot. So, you know, at that point, my longest ride I'd ever done was like a 100-mile mountain bike race. And just sort of decided to give it a shot. Not really having any clue if I could finish or if I would be able to, you know, hang in that long. But I did that race in, I guess, the fall of, fall of 2020. So that was, my first exposure to long distance bike packing was this. It was basically, I did it in 2 days. It was a 2-day event on the mountain bike. It was kind of an interesting race. The year I did it, it wasn't fully unsupported. They had like an open support zone at the halfway point. There was a state park there, and I actually parked a car there and slept in my car for like 4 hours.
Nice.
You know, totally new. Like, I'd never bike packed. I had no idea. Bikepacking. Completely, you know, new to the idea. Just had my backpack filled with a bunch of snacks, and you know, we did that race and was able to finish. I was completely blown at the end. Like, I could barely walk, you know, like completely incoherent, but was hooked after that point. So just kind of been, you know, doing some more bike packing, I guess, since.
What was the name of that race? Is that the Rockstar?
Nice. It's called, Rockstar Trail. Yeah.
Okay.
And so it's pretty cool. It's put on by Rob Isom. He's out of Roanoke. He's with the Virginia Endurance Series. Shout out to them. It's kind of cool. They have a road route, a gravel route, and then a trail route, and ended up doing all three of those routes. And they're all awesome, super fun, you know. And in terms of bike packing races, they're not the longest in the world, but they're really fun routes.
Do they also have a supported route or a supported race? Do I remember that correctly or no?
Dabbled a little bit with doing some stage racing, but in more recent years, it's just sort of been an unsupported event, which is kind of a cool way to look at, you know, some of these bikepacking races, whether they would ever, you know, fly as like a supported stage race kind of thing. But lately the Rockstar has just been an unsupported,
It's funny that you touched on that sort of like increase, because, you know, a few hours ago, I was looking at your Strava and I just kind of like went through the years, and it was like, you know, kind of like recreational miles, 4,000, 5,000 miles a year. And then that 2019 season, it was just a jump. And from there on out, it has been, you know, close to 10,000 miles every single year since there. And it's like, he got the bug real bad. Yep.
I got hooked. You know, and it was interesting. Like, the year, you know, the pandemic, like, just, you know, everything changed, right? Like, I had a lot more time to be outdoors, and, you know, really was grateful for the opportunity, you know, in light of everything that was going on in the world. Like, being outside was like the place to be, right? You know, riding your bike was like, if you're able to, and, you know, and so, I really spent a lot more time doing a lot of mountain biking in 2020, and that like really set me kind of in the trajectory these last couple of years to keep on doing some of these more long distance bikepacking races.
And so with that increase, go ahead, Andrew.
I was just going to ask, was that like your first race, or did you do any local races before that?
In terms of bikepacking or just in general?
Just any kind of racing. Cause you mentioned being recreational. Did racing still fit that picture for a while?
You know, just like there was a couple of local like mountain bike, you know, cross country type races that I would do. We also have the Shenandoah Mountain 100, which is sort of an NUE series, 100-mile mountain bike race. And I've done that a handful of times over the last 10 years. I think I've done it maybe 3 or 4 times, and really love it, but, you know, I didn't do it every year and didn't really fully get hooked until I hit these super long races. And there's just something about, you know, riding into the night and into the next morning, that's just like unbelievable, you know, like, So I guess I did Trans Virginia. That would have been after Rockstar Trail. I did Trans Virginia. Shoot. Was that 2020 or 20, and that was 2021, I think. So that would have been the following year. Yeah, I did Trans Virginia, and that was like a 3-day effort, 560 or 70 miles. And, you know, that like just took to the next level, like doing, you know, the Rockstar Trail was a 2-day event, and then going to Rockstar, doing the 3-day thing. Like, I just had these like amazing experiences out there that were just unbelievable, you know. Like, I remember the second night on Trans Virginia, I was just riding in it, like, you know, the sun was setting and the whippoorwills came out. Do you guys ever hear whippoorwills, the birds that come out in the evening? They're like a nocturnal bird, and they're kind of like, I think, native probably to the East Coast, you know. And it was just this like amazing experience riding under the full moon, like listening to these birds calling. And it was just like, wow, this is really cool, you know. And I was like, man, I gotta ride all night or ride until I can't go anymore. And it was just like so much fun, you know. And so that was kind of a real turning point for me in these races too, where it was like, you know, they're hard and you're suffering for sure, but you're also like having these like really amazing experiences that you don't really get like sitting behind a desk looking at a computer screen. So
so this trajectory like really continued into 2022, where you take on the Divide. I guess my first question with that,
you know, so I had a big setback in June of 2021. I tore my ACL, you know, so that was like a huge bummer, because I was like you saw in 2019, I was like doing tons of riding ramped up, and then 2020, you know, and then like having this injury in 2021, like I had to take some time off the bike again. But I was like so motivated to get back out there. And so it actually was like kind of a little bit of nice reset for me, take a couple months off the bike, do the rehab for the knee. And then like my buddy, Dave Landis here in Harrisonburg, he's a real big, you know, outdoor enthusiast. He's developed trail routes all over the world. He's really been kind of my mentor and really got me into this stuff. He, you know, he was signing up for the Tour Divide, and I was like, man, that sounds like fun. I kind of want to do this. And so just like set that as a goal, like really having very little experience. I mean, I had only done just a handful of overnight trips before committing to the Tour Divide, but, you know, really just set my eyes on it and trained, you know, focused pretty hard on, you know, preparing for that and getting the bike dialed and, you know, working on, you know, doing some like weight training and, you know, kind of just getting the body ready, you know. And so yeah, jumped in the Tour Divide in 2022 and, you know, really had no idea what I was in for. You know, you just don't know when you line up for a race that long, like you just don't know. And it's like, you know, I was pretty green. Like I was pretty unprepared for what was coming at me, but just sort of kept plodding ahead every day, you know. And like, I think a lot of pieces just fell together perfectly in that race. And, you know, I feel very fortunate. I had a really rough start.
I was going to try to cue you into that story, because I was like, oh, you've got to tell the story of the start of the Divide. It is.
Oh, man.
I think Tim Tate mentioned this to me too, so I'm curious.
Sure. So like, yeah, Tour Divide, you know, man, you spend what, like 6-9 months preparing for this race. And I was like there in Banff, like ready to go. And the morning of the race, we like go down to Tim Hortons to get breakfast, and like 15 minutes before the start, I hop on my bike to ride down to the start line and put my hand in the drop, and the drop just like collapsed in my hand. And I was like, oh man, like my handlebar was broken. You know, it was actually ironically a set of the Salsa cow chippers, which were subsequently recalled.
Okay. I was going to ask, was it this like, did you not change your bar tape beforehand? Wow. And it was all corroded, a carbon bar, but it was,
you know, so my bike is funny. I actually snuck my bike into my room the night before. I was staying in the hostel in Banff. And I guess a little bit of karma, we weren't supposed to have bikes in the room, but I was like, dude, like I want to get my bike ready to go, get things packed, you know, got to roll out early in the morning. So I had my bike in the room and knocked it over, and the bike tipped over in the room, hit the ground, and man, my bike was like 50 pounds. It was so heavy for that, which I guess is not that uncommon for the Tour Divide, but when it hit the ground, it hit the drop. And I didn't know that it broke. Like I picked the bike up, I was like, oh crap, man, that wasn't good. Like checked my derailleur, the derailleur was good. Looked things over, everything seemed fine. And so I didn't realize it till the next morning that the handlebar had actually broken when it tipped over in the room. So, you know, here I was starting line of the Tour Divide with a broken handlebar. I'm like, man, this sucks.
Weird.
Like, what can I do? And so I like panicked and made a bunch of phone calls and like finally found a shop that the owner like offered to give me the handlebar off of his bike.
Nice.
So I did a quick handlebar swap, did it myself. The shop was busy, they were opening up, and so like had to pull the handlebar off of his bike, pull mine off mine, put that one on, and like anyway, so I started like I think just under 3 hours late for the Tour Divide, which, you know, on a 15-day, 14-day race, like I guess isn't terrible, but it like totally just like messes my head, you know. Like,
oh yeah,
such a bummer. But it was cool. Like, you know, the first 2 days I like was able to, you know, ride past a whole bunch of people, you know. So it's like I got to interact with like 150 riders as I was like plowing through the field, riding way too hard, you know. Like I had no idea about pacing strategy at that point. Like I rode through the first night. You know, my goal was to sleep in Buck's cabin there, like at mile 200 or something, but there were some hunters there or whatever that had it occupied. And so I just like rode through that first night, like rode all the way to the border. Like that year, 2022 had a bunch of snow. And so there was like tons of walking, tons of hiking over the first, you know, half dozen passes. And so it was kind of slow going, a lot of water, a lot of mud, a lot of snow. And so, yeah, dug like super deep those first 2 days. And,
damn.
Suffered a little
Like an initial goal for the divide going into it apart from finishing?
I had no clue like what I would be able to do, you know. I my goal was to push as hard as I could, you know, like see how far I could, how fast I could go or how far I could push it. And I mean, in my mind, I think like sub 20, you know, whatever was like kind of a number that I'd heard, and I didn't know, like, okay. I wanted to, like, you know, and the Tour Divide, they make you like pick a day. Like the last couple of years, they've been making you pick like what your estimated time was. And I put 15 days down. Like, I was like, I don't know. Like, it was just like that. I knew like that would seem unattainable, but like I came close, 15 and a half days. Like I was thrilled with that result. Man. Like it was some tough conditions that year. You know, without having a lot of experience, like I was, yeah, super excited to be able to pull that off and have things come together.
It's funny to hear this backstory because we actually briefly interacted on the divide. It was in Ovando where this massive push over Richmond Pass to like get to Ovando, and like got to Ovando maybe around like 11 or 12, like lunchtime. And I was just completely destroyed. And this is like the first time I had Wi-Fi in a while. And I was kind of like, you know, chasing people down and catching people down. And it said that your dot was still there at the Blackfish Angler, like little Airbnb thing. And I remember asking like the proprietor, I was like, oh, is Abe here? And he's like, oh yeah, he checked in like early this morning. Yeah, he's been asleep for a while. I should check on him. And then I head down the road to the next pass. And I'm like struggling up this pass. The diabetes is a mess, of course. And then I think it was you and you might've been with Andy at the time, but you guys went flying by me like four times faster than I was going. And I was like, see you later. And I eventually saw Andy later down the road, but I never saw you again. You were just gone.
Yeah, that was like my first proper sleep of the divide. I guess that would have been night three.
Yeah, that sounds
two.
Yeah,
three night or four. Yeah,
that would be yes.
Four. I think it was night four, second. Yeah. Cause I slept like I rode through the first night. And the second night I slept like 2 hours. And then I just was like dead. Like I rode myself completely into the ground into Ovando. Like I rode through the night again and it was like pouring down rain, muddy. And I rolled into Ovando at like 6 o'clock in the morning, right as the sun was coming up. I guess it was night three. Yeah. And I was just like, well, I made a big mistake. And I meant to only sleep a couple hours there in the laundry room at the Blackfoot Inn. And I like forgot to set my alarm and just like passed out and slept for like 6 hours, but like it was good. Like I needed it, you know, like sometimes you need to have those big resets. And that's funny. Yeah. I forgot that everything.
It was real quick. It was me just struggling up the climb and you just, hey, how's it going? Hanging in there. See you later. Just gone. So like continuing on from that point, because you finished the race in fourth in a pretty like a fast time, especially for a rookie. 15 days, 13 hours, 11 minutes. Like, how did the rest of the race progress? Like, it seems like you were like pretty keen to just kind of like stay on it. Was that just kind of the mindset throughout? Like, I'm out here, this is way beyond anything I've ever done before. We might as well just like see how far I can push it.
Yeah, you know, pretty much. Like, I think I, you know, hadn't really learned how to pace myself yet. And so I think I rode a lot harder than I perhaps should have. But then I also like slept a decent bit. Like, I've looked back through my track leader's, you know, route, you know, record thing. And it was like 6 hours a night that I think I stopped. I was really inefficient at sleeping, which was like, I think I've learned a lot since then. I've really worked hard at that, like efficiency off the bike. Like, I think I was able to ride fairly good pace, but then I, you know, I rode hard and rode myself really ragged, but then I would like take some pretty good stoppage time each night. And, you know, I slept inside quite a bit. I'm kind of a softy when it comes to that. We can talk about that from Arkansas too. I actually slept inside every night on that race, but
nice. I love that. That's doable.
Yeah, you know, I think I just, I was just really, yeah, I don't know. I just, I think I love just seeing how far I can push it or how hard I can push, or I kind of like, I'm obsessed a little bit with efficiency, I guess. I love kind of pursuing, like, that's what's really hooked me on bike pack racing, I think, is it's just like, it's not only about fitness, but it's about, you know, so much of it is about your efficiency, right? Like, how much you can minimize stoppage time, you know, how quick you can be resupply when you're off the bike. Like, I don't know, there's just something about that I really, really like hits a lot of the interests or a lot of the things that I enjoy. So yeah, I think the True Divide, it was like, you know, I was really fortunate. Like, I spent quite a bit of time riding actually with Ben Storbut from Belgium. He was a real veteran of bikepack racing. And so we sort of like yo-yoed back together and rode quite a few days together. And I rode actually with Adrian Lichty, who's just
nice.
Unbelievable, man. That guy is wild. He is a real there. His ability to ride long days and push hard. And so I was kind of around these other guys that were like a lot more experienced and a lot more dialed than I was. And so I really benefited, I think, from sort of like trying to like keep up with them. So I kind of look back and I'm like, dude, was that really truly a solo effort? I think it was, but like, I did spend a lot of time sort of like chasing these other folks and kind of riding like inside of them. And so I think that kind of kept me like moving forward too.
And I mean, we saw that this past year with the two leaders, Uba and Justinus, like they were, and also what's the name of the Belgium gentleman?
Jonation or
Jens, yep, like Jens. For the longest time, those Jens, three were just kind of like in this little cluster. And like, based off of podcasts, I've heard them talk about it. They weren't like riding next to each other the entire time, but it was very much like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, which is kind of a weird thing in bike pack racing, because I hate that. Like, I just want to be alone out there. Don't want to talk to anyone, no pacing, but then there's other people that just thrive off of that like camaraderie. So it's an interesting like sort of juxtaposition between the two strategies in a way.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I go back and forth. Like, I look at the Tour Divide. I'd love to do the Tour Divide again. Like, I'd really like to get back out there. And I'm like, I wonder, it'd be a much different experience. Like, if I was out there, like the year I did at Sofian, like he was out front, like from the first 3 hours, I think, the entire 14 days he was out there. Like, wow, that's so long, you know? And I'm like, what would that be like, you know? But yeah, I think it'd be pretty fun too. A different experience for sure. But anyway. Yes.
So you do have interest in returning to the Divide. That's something that's definitely like want to do it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know, it's like I've been trying to plan out my future, which is so hard to do. And it's like, you know, look at the Triple Crown in the US, you know, like I don't know if I could pull all three in the same year, but like I have not done the Colorado Trail or the Arizona Trail yet. Both are very high on my list. It's actually, those are sort of the top two races I'm looking at for this coming year for 2024.
Nice.
I'd love to get back out into the Tour Divide again. We'll see. Maybe, I don't know. Yeah. Not this coming year for sure, but hopefully the hands can heal up and be in a good place and feel comfortable to, you know, spend that long, you know, on the
bike.
I'm
curious, so we'll see. You have the sort of background in the mountain bike side of things, but also like the Tour Divide is really just a gravel race. Like, do you think you are a stronger mountain bike ultra endurance racer or stronger gravel bike endurance racer? Because that was like when I said, you know, the best American bike pack racer, I was kind of like leaning towards the gravel side of things just because you haven't done, but then again, you've done the Trans North Georgia, which is also a relatively technical mountain bike race. So,
You know, like I really enjoy doing these gravel rides, races, backpack races, but like, I think my heart is truly in mountain biking. And so I'm sort of like excited. Like, I'm really like, I've kind of been joking, like 2024 is gonna be the year of the mountain bike. You know, it's like getting back into like, I've done a lot of gravel type events the last couple years, but it's like, I'm really motivated and excited to get back, you know, on a full suspension bike, you know, doing some more technical mountain biking. That's definitely more my background is in that. I don't know how I'll do like Colorado Trail. Like, man, the high alpine environment, altitude scares me. Like, I do not have that experience. Like, coming from Virginia, like, we don't have high alpine here. You know, we top out at under 5,000 feet, so it's a whole other world. And like Arizona Trail, like the desert, you know, like that scares me. Like, carrying water for 100 degrees plus, like, I don't know, you know. So there's so much variety out there in bike pack racing, right? Like, that's kind of the fun thing about it. And so, I'm really excited to sort of like dabble in some more of the more mountain bike focused races. I also got the chance to do the Hellenic Mountain race last year.
I didn't know that. Cool. Race
in Greece. Yeah, I scratched. I had my derailleur fail about a third of the way in. I had Axis derailleur. It was a super wet year in Greece last year. And so it was just like raining. Everything was mud, wet, rain. And like my derailleur just got, I guess, inundated with water. And so it stopped working about a third of the way through the race, I guess 2 days in or so. And, you know, so I'd love to get back and do some of Nelson Tree's, some of his events, you know, Silk Road or Atlas Mountain Race. And I think, you know, those are sort of more leaning towards the mountain bike realm. You know, you see more people on hardtails or even some full suspension. They're not necessarily technical or single track oriented.
They're certainly gnarly. They're certainly gnarly.
Certainly. Yeah. Yeah. Nelson. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. His courses are tough.
So I'm nice, curious, man, with the Axis derailleur, is that something that you're going to stick with in the future? Mm-hmm. Because here's my thought process. I've been like thinking of what will be the next bike that I do the divide on. And in terms of like protecting the hands, like one of the issues I had was just like the big shifts with
shifting
the mechanical drivetrains. But then, you know, your Axis derailleur failing, Lachlan's Axis derailleur failing, Andrew's Axis
Justinus
issues like didn't fail completely. Lots of issues. It's one of those like things where it's like, but then there's so many stories of people who do ride the entire thing with Axis and zero problems. And it's just like, it's so nice. Uh-huh. But at the same time, does it make sense to do something that requires electronics and batteries when you're doing these crazy events?
You know, if I did the divide on Axis, I would probably carry a spare derailleur. You know, I don't know. Like, maybe. I guess Lachlan, he rode for, 3 days with three gears? Like, I don't know if I quite have that ability.
Through the Gila. Like, the worst part, it wasn't in the middle where it gets a little flat. It was, super steep, punchy climbs. Like, brutal.
Yeah. You know, I think in the dry, it's totally fine. But if you're going to ride and, you know, you worried about a wet year or a wet race, like, I think the risk goes up a lot there. Although, I guess, Andrew, your experience was different. You know, it wasn't necessarily rain that got you or moisture, but it's just a risk. I mean, there's so many things that can fail. So it's, you know, you're like making these calculated decisions about what you can get away with. And it's like, I don't know. I did Arkansas on the Axis, you know, but I knew the forecast was calling for dry weather, so I felt pretty confident about it. And I actually had a freshly warranty derailleur, so it was pretty new, and like I felt like I could trust it. And I've warrantied 3 Axis derailleurs, you know, so it's like I've had multiple failures. And I'd have to think really hard before a race like the Divide or like a Nelson Trees race, like where there's potential for a lot of bad weather, you know, like I don't trust at all. Yeah, actually, I did TNGA in 20. I did it last year. I actually scratched from that race too, 2022. I was riding Axis, and I had some battery charging issues. Like I had to get a new charger halfway through the race because my batteries wouldn't charge.
Damn.
So I've had a couple bad experiences with Axis. But yeah,
we're not doing it, but at the same time, like it is just so nice. It's just when it works, it's just so crisp. And like Chris Burkhard this past year on the Divide rode through terrible mud on a transmission drivetrain.
Oh yeah.
And like his chain was super worn out, but I don't remember him having any shifting issues. So it's like one of those many, many things that it's like, is it worth it? Is it not worth it?
Yeah. It's a tough call.
So go.
What bike did you run on it that year?
TNGA?
No, the Divide.
Oh, I rode a Salsa cutthroat.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of like classic, rigid. If I went back to the Divide again, I'd ride my hardtail, my drop bar hardtail, man. That thing is so fun.
And that's the bike that you rode for Arkansas High Country. Okay.
Arkansas. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Suspension. Yeah. I mean, underbiking, no way. I'm over that. I'm not doing no underbiking. And Ezra, like, I have to give you credit for that, for your advice for Arkansas, like. And you too, Andrew, like, you know, I was so grateful to have that suspension out there. Like, even though it's a gravel race with 500 miles of pavement, like it was so hard to wrap my head around riding a mountain bike with a suspension fork for that. But man, I was
it really is one of those things that I think, like, if the race is longer than 300 miles, at this point, some version of a drop bar mountain bike kind of makes the most sense, unless it's like pancake flat, and you know, you're not going to have to go through chunky stuff. But like Arkansas, like the descents are going to be so much more fun just for that. Like the fact that the descents are fun rather than like terrifying and awful. I say that, but then Andrew's out there just ripping his Otso without a fork. So who knows?
Well, dude, I've been having fun on the hardtail recently out there too. And I might be doing a lot more hardtail riding in those arcs. We'll see. I totally agree.
But you were also riding proper tires, like 2.2s, you know, right?
Exactly. So that's my compromise, where I'm like, I can clear this. I have zero reason to go smaller than this, you know? And if it's, we don't get that kind of mud, that's going to really cake it up. So 2.2s is quite nice. It's not like I'm doing a 100-mile race. It's a lot longer than that. So,
totally. That's one of the things I love, too, about these races is, like, just doing research and, like, talking to people and like trying to figure out what the best bike setup is. It's just fun to, like, you know, try to optimize and just figure out what's going to be the best setup. And I don't know, I really enjoy that aspect of it. So
I don't want to say you were unprepared heading into the Divide, but you were definitely like a rookie. You were unprepared. Okay. Yeah. So I guess, like, I'm curious, like,
rookie.
With Arkansas High Country race, it seemed like this year you were very, very prepared. Like you had a game plan going on, going in. Is this something that's like a change that you've made as you've just got like a little bit more experience that are like, oh, it makes sense to get the bike completely dialed? Like, I know you talked to Andrew and Ernie about just the course in general and like going after that FKT. So I'm curious about, like, what does your preparation look like heading into one of these races? Are you like months before or cramming a week before? Like, how detailed does it get?
Pretty ridiculous probably, but I've always loved planning and research. It's something that I just enjoy. Like, when we take vacations as a family, like, I'll spend months just like looking up where we want to go, what hikes we want to do, like what we want to do during our trip, you know? And so it's just, I really enjoy like the planning and preparation and research aspect. And so, you know, I guess I've gotten a little, and that's one thing I did do for the Divide. I did a lot of research. Like I definitely like studied resupply. I called like 100 different stores to verify.
They have to be so sick of that. They have to be so ridiculously sick of like, hey,
I'm sure they do.
Like, you run your bike through again. Gosh darn it. It's like, please just update your Google hours and we'll not bother you, but no one does.
Exactly. But I think it's something for me, like, I'm kind of an anxious person by nature, you know? And so I think, and that's one of the reasons why I love bike pack racing, is because it just gives your mind like something to focus on 100%, right? And so I think for me, like, my approach on doing these races is like, the more prepared I can be mentally or like logistically going into it, the more relaxed and the more, I guess, focused on the race itself I can be when I'm out there racing. And so I think just, you know, doing a handful of races over the last 2 or 3 years, like I've sort of, I guess, developed a system for myself, like knowing what I need to have going into the race to be comfortable and prepared to, you know, push as, because I want to push as hard as I can, right? And when you're pushing hard, it's like, you're kind of walking this like razor thin line of like success or failure, right? Like, and so you have to, I think, have a lot of sort of, at least for me to be successful, have to have a lot of like research and preparation done to sort of like enable that to be successful and not like scratch, right? And so I guess like, you know, I still struggle a lot with like having confidence going to these races because there's so many things that can go wrong. You just don't know, right? Like you never know until you cross that finish line, like anything could happen. But I think like for, you know, Arkansas, you know, there was a lot of information out there about the route, which was super cool, right? Like, you know, being AC route, there was a guidebook that I think Chuck put out and you know, listened to like your guys' podcast on it. And there was like, you know, the movie was amazing. Like that was so much fun to watch that movie about the race. And like, I just spent a lot of time like pouring over the resources, trying to study the route because I'd never been to, I've never even visited the state of Arkansas before. So just, nice. Yeah, spent a lot of time like trying to reaching out, talking to people who'd done the race, you know, studying the route, like the maps and the resupplies, and then like looking at previous FKTs. Like I had no idea, like if I would be able to pull off, like, you know, beating people like Jay Peterberry or Ted King or Ernie Lechuga. I was like, I'm not capable of that. But like, I sort of like set that as my goal and sort of looked at their times and, you know, I just sort of set up my like split goal times around that. Like knowing like if it doesn't pan out, like, okay, go to plan B, like, okay, you're not going to hit those times. Like, that's fine. Like you, like, I know it's going to take, you know, maybe 4 hours to get to the next resupply instead of like it took Ernie 3. And so just kind of, you know, studying all those times between those key resupply points, sort of gives me the confidence, I guess, gave me the confidence to sort of like go into that route and just like, you know, I guess push as hard as I did. I don't know. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. With the actual execution of your plan, I don't know how deep we actually want to get into that. That ride is incredible, but just real quick, I don't even know where were the spots you slept. That's like one of my very first questions.
Yeah, so, I'm just curious where you that was slept. Like really nerve wracking. So actually, I carried a sleep system with me.
Okay.
I had a saddle bag, and I had you know, a lightweight bivy. I had a pad and a quilt. So I had everything I needed in case, which is, again, like, I'm not one to like run super light setups. I wish I was comfortable with that, but I feel like that's just a little bit more risk than I want to take. I like to have a safety net in place, you know? And so my goal was to make it to Fayetteville, you know, which was like a 460 mile push. I'd never ridden that far in a single push. I made it all the way to Fayetteville, I think like 38 or 39 hours in. And actually like the timing worked out just flawlessly. I was super fortunate. Well, the weather was so perfect too, you know, like it was just ideal conditions, like cool, but not cold and warm, but not hot. Like it was, you know, some big temperature swings like from the day to the night, but it was all within like a pretty reasonable, you know, window there. And so, yeah, I made it to Fayetteville, slept just a couple hours there in Fayetteville on, you know, the end of the second day. And then
like a motel in Fayetteville,
a little Airbnb like a half mile off route. Yeah, it was like a little room off the side of somebody's house, and just like
cool,
they had the door unlocked, like rolled straight in, took a shower.
Nice.
And
nice.
I'm also, self-care is my one of the weaknesses when it comes to our, you know, one of the other things that I really focus a lot on in these races is like taking care of yourself. Rolled into that little Airbnb and just, you know, took a quick shower and scarfed down some food and then laid in bed and couldn't sleep. I laid there for like an hour and a half. That's the one thing about like riding, you know, like sleeping inside is like, you know, you may not always get to a point where you want to sleep, like when you're actually tired. And so, I don't know, you know, like I really, sleeping is so hard in these races. And that's something I really struggle with a lot, is just like being efficient when it comes to like when you stop, like shutting your brain down and like just getting some rest. And you know, that gets a lot easier as you get further into it. And that's kind of why like my strategy has been like ride through the first night, because I just know I'm going to be too wired to like successfully like shut down and like sleep. I don't know that it's the best strategy, but you know, I think for like a 5-day event, you know, 4 or 5-day event, like it's doable. But yeah, so I got a couple hours rest there in Fayetteville. And then, I guess the third night, was it like wasn't Jasper. What's the town before Jasper?
Were you like in Kingston or Ponca?
It was Jasper. Jasper. So I stopped the third night in Jasper. And again, like I rolled in right into Jasper at like 9 o'clock at night. And so I hit this like really sweet, like daily sort of cycle where I was like roll into a town with the little motel at like 9, 10 o'clock at night. And then I just sort of like set like 4 hours. My goal was like 4 hours off route, like do whatever you're going to do, like get some food, get resupplied, but you're only going to spend 4 hours like not riding your bike. And so that really helped me focus on like efficiently, like getting some food, getting resupplied, and like getting some rest. And so like the third night I was like pretty successful at like the first night I stopped, I was really struggled with like actually like getting some sleep. Like I only like slept 2 hours, even though I stopped four. And then the next night I stopped in Jasper, I was actually like, I fell asleep in like 20, I was like sleeping within 20 minutes of when I like rolled into town. So it was like super
nice.
Then the next two nights were the same way. Like I rolled into town at like 9, 10 o'clock at night, at like a 4 hour reset, and was riding by 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And it just worked out. Yeah, really.
That's
well.
Awesome.
Super lucky. Yeah.
So I'm super curious. Very cool. Before we started like going through these days, you were talking about like maintaining that speed, but based off of what you just said, and also like the stats that I've looked at before, like you are a very fast rider. Like you're efficient at your stops, but you're also like moving, like, you know, maybe not at a Ted King pace, which is just like mind blowing. Like that's next level. But in terms of like the actual speed, you are up there. So I'm curious, like before Arkansas High Country Race, like what does your training on the bike sort of look like this? Like what does your year as a whole as a cyclist look like this? Are you doing like two events a year and a whole bunch of training leading up to those events? Or we have little things intermixed in there? Like when it comes to the training, what is like the philosophy?
Well, you know, for years it was just go ride as hard as you can for whatever time you have available. And, you know, that works for a while, but when you're really ramping up volume, that became like, I just was kind of wearing myself into the ground. And so I got a coach this year, which was super helpful. And so I was working with a coach, I guess, for about 6 or 8 months, kind of through the spring, through the fall. I've taken a break here this fall as I'm, you know, taking a little reset and getting fixed up a little bit, you know, have my hands heal up. But, and like I said, so for a couple of years there, I was just really unstructured in my riding, but just doing way too much zone three, a lot of tempo, you know, like riding hard for whatever time I had available. And then this year just got a lot smarter and was, you know, doing a lot more like polarized training, you know, like zone two, and then, you know, throwing in like two interval rides a week. And I was actually, you know, that was a huge benefit for me this year, I think, like actually doing some structured training and, you know, taking two rest days a week and like, you know, really trying to make the easy rides easy and the hard rides hard, you know, like, you know, I was probably averaging like 15 hours a week or so in training. So, you know, good volume, but not like completely insane. Like, so, you know, just, yeah, trying to, I think, you know, you know, I have a full-time job. I'm a dad, I'm married. And so it's like, time is very precious, you know, like, and I really try hard not to like have my riding, consume all of my free time, you know, cause I really want to spend time with my family and with my son and with my wife. And so, you know, a lot of my time, throughout the year, there's a lot of like, I guess, focus on time efficiency, like off the bike or even in my training too. And so I think maybe that carries over to some extent on the riding, but I don't know.
I mean, that's that totally answers question, Ezra? My question. Like, I'm always curious if people, yeah, because there are people who are able to just thrive off of like no structure, just go out there and crush it. And that's like, honestly, that's pretty damn good training for bike pack racing, because it's not like a high end gravel race where you have to be able to hold 300, 400 watts to make the front selection. It's like, if you're able to just like pedal, 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 recover, and then pedal, pedal, pedal. It's always curious to hear like what people are doing and what their sort of training looks like.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and two, like this bikepack racing stuff, like, you know, power is only like, I don't know, is it half the picture? Is it a third? Like the rest of it is all about like efficiency, like, you know, how you can minimize stoppage time. And that's something that I think I've gotten a lot better at in the last 2 or 3 years as I've gotten a little more experience. Like coming from the divide, you know, I look like, man, I had like 6 hours or 8 hours of stoppage time every day. Like it was, you know, so much stoppage time. And like, you know, I going to TNGA this year, I think I had like 2 hours of stoppage time, 2 or 3 hours over 40 hours. And then like my first 2 day push in Arkansas, I had 2 hours of stoppage time over 38 hours. And so really trying to like whittle down that time off the bike at resupply and like doing all your eating on the bike, like making your shopping efficient, like combining your stops, like doing as much stuff on the bike as you can. And so that's been, I think that's been a big focus for me for improvement, like over the last 2 or 3 years, is just like really focusing on like how to like, you know, tighten up that stoppage time, you know, like really
nice.
The only things you should be doing is like riding your bike, buying food or sleeping, you know, like those are the only three mm-hmm. things you're doing. Like,
so very analytical approach in the actual race. Like what is sort of your mentality? Like, are you an emotional person where it's like, oh, I feel good, I can ride hard right now? Or are you just like, just ticking it off. I got 4 hours to get this next spot. I'm going to hold 200 watts. Do you race with a power meter? I guess that's my other question. Like,
yeah, you know, I'm, you know, probably a lot of people. Yeah. Well, probably a lot of people would like shake their head and frown at the way that I
love the hesitation like, in that answer, but I, Ezra and I are nerds, dude. We love power.
I'm a total slave to data. Like I love it. You know, whatever. That's what, like, I thrive on that. I really enjoy it. So yeah, I race with a power meter, heart rate monitor. Like,
okay.
I have my split times, like, on a sheet taped on my top tube or on my phone. And so like, I'm like looking like, man, I got to get to the next store. And if I want to keep holding my pace, like 4 hours or 3 hours. And so I'm sort of like, I love like breaking down. I really enjoy like breaking down the route into like small chunks. Like, and so I think I'm like, just like I'm always just like trying to get to the next resupply. I'm very like food focused. Like that's one of the reasons I love racing, or these bike pack riding, or, you know, riding lots of volume, is you get to eat a lot of food, right? Like,
no doubt.
So I think I'm really like motivated, you know, by resupplies and by, you know, getting a hot meal or whatever. And so, yeah, I think I'm always sort of just like focused on, yeah, like trying to meet, like I set a goal for myself. Okay, I want to get to the next stop in like a certain amount of time. And then you're sort of just like pushing to try to make that happen. And it doesn't always work, you know, like a lot of things can go wrong, but that sort of like breaks things down into like more manageable chunks. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
What's your relationship with like power data during a race itself, especially early on? Because I'm thinking like day one of high country this past year.
You know, like, so actually this has been the first, so like TNGA this year in August, it was the first race where I really like focused on a pacing strategy. And, you know, that was like a kudos to my coach, EVOC coaching, Brendan Hausler, awesome dude. Like,
oh, really, okay, nice. I listen to a lot of his podcasts.
Yeah, he's good. He's really good.
Cool.
He was like, dude, you gotta like pace yourself. Cause like I went out in Greece last year and rode like threshold for like six, you know, like I just was like, my heart rate was like pegged for like 6 hours, like just totally like blew myself up. And it's just like, my nerves were high. Like I just was totally out of, you know, like no pacing. And so this year in Georgia, like really focused on like, you know, just kind of like pushing tempo on the climbs, like, you know, tempo, and then like recover on the downhills. You know, every time there was a downhill, mm-hmm. like drop my heels and just like not try to gain time, like still move and like carry speed through corners and, you know, down the descents, but like get the heart rate down, like recover the downhills. And so like, I think I kind of like used that strategy in Arkansas a little bit. Like I was a little bit pushing it a little more than I should have those first 6, 7, 8 hours. Like, you know, that it was just fun rolling in a little bit of a group there for a while. And like,
totally.
You know,
yeah.
But like trying to like, yeah, minimize just not too much threshold time. Like don't go like, just, yeah, you don't want to spend too much time in threshold. And like, you know, some good tempo blocks are okay. But like, you know, those, that first day, it's like, you know, definitely push it a little more than I would like later in the race. But like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. And so just, yeah.
Yeah. So like hills, tempo, and then in between when it's rolling and flat, are you doing like this steady zone two though? You're like, let me make sure I'm like putting pressure on the pedal still type of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And then like, you know, kind of the race goes on. I just like, I've chosen like 200 watts. Okay. I want to just push 200 watts if I can. Like, it doesn't always work out. Like, that's kind of like my zone one, zone two boundary. And so just trying to like hold that number. I mean, the average is always, it definitely like tapers off a lot, like, you know, that as the days go on, but it's just sort of like, that's sort of my, like in my mind, I'm just trying to keep, putting, you know, I guess effort into the pedals, cool. Which was tough in Arkansas. Like, I really struggled the last 2 days with like a lot of knee pain and Achilles, and like, and that's sort of the drawback is like, when you're pushing hard like that, like your body is just going to like your muscles might be able to manage it, but like joints or soft tissue or like other things are going to start bothering your hands, you know? And so like, I was really having to sort of like manage my effort like those last 2 days, you know, just keep my knees and my Achilles happy. And it was it got really, really hard out there the last couple of days.
And then that's when you lean into efficiency more than ever, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. And hope you have a little bit of a gap, a little bit of lead built. Like, I was fortunate enough. I had like a, you know, I had like a 6 hour lead on Ernie's time, like going into day three. And so I knew I had a little bit of a cushion there, and I knew he had some stuff he dealt with on his race. And so I was like, you know, I was definitely losing time, but thankfully I had a little bit of a buffer built in there where I didn't like totally fall off the FKT page. So yeah, nice. But you're right. Efficiency, then it really becomes about, yeah, efficiency. And everybody's in the same boat, man. And you're 3, 4, 5 days in a race. Like, you're just, you know, you're all just kind of trying to move forward and, you know, stoppage time. So
one of the things I was super impressed with on your high country race was the fact that like, you were hitting the Instagram stories hard. Like, there were always updates, which was so much fun. Just like, and it also seemed like you were just having, you know, you're clearly very analytical, very like driven, but at the same time, you were more than willing to like pull out the phone and talk to the camera for a little bit, give the people the updates they want. And like, I loved it. I was just like, during that week, I was glued to, oh, is Abe about to post again? Like, what's going on? Like, you were like just after you had like gotten into a river way up north on the course, and it was great, man. Like, that's another, like, that's next level. Like, there's lots of people who can race really, really hard. You know, I can actually like document a little of it. I'm like,
yeah, I was doing that to keep my mind occupied. Like, you know, I was alone out there for those last, you know, 4.5 days, whatever. And that was, it was super fun. Like, I really, that was just a little something I've never done before and just wanted to try something different. And it just sort of gave me something to do as I was like pushing, you know, zone two up the climb, like sort of mind drifting off or whatever. I was like, let's give a little update here. And so that was just, fun way to sort of like keep my mind engaged and keep me moving forward. And so good time. I think I'll try to do that.
It's also really cool because now have that for the rest of, and also people like, it's, I highlighted on your Instagram, so if people want to, you know, rewatch your journey through Arkansas, like, that is available to everyone, which I just think is so cool. Like, it's something that every single race I go in thinking like, oh, I'm going to do a daily update. Like, I have to do a daily update. And then 4 days in, I'm like, oh, damn, I have not, no one knows what's going on with me. 4 days in, it's, you know, it's zombie me, just gone. So I appreciated it. It was good stuff.
Yeah. It's funny, on the divide, I took the voice memos to myself. Those are never going to go public. Those are like... There are some like deep, dark moments out there, but they're so fun to go back and listen to. And like, yeah, it's just really interesting to like get a little bit of a idea, like where you're at a certain time. And it is fun. Like, when you're out there, to just like, that's sort of part of the joy, is like sharing some of the stories and stuff. And you know, I think I've seen a lot of other, you know, a lot of other racers do that too. And it's just like, it's a fun way to engage friends and family and race, and even like, go back and, like, I watched them again myself just to kind of see like, oh, this is what was going on here. Like, cause you forget, like, you know, I'm so like focused during the race on like the goal of the destination that I'm sort of like, I don't even remember like what happened like 2 hours ago. Like, I don't know where I'm at, but having those things kind of recorded like are a nice way to kind of go back and remember and reflect on
it. So you just mentioned like, just kind of those like dark times. Do you have any strategies in terms of like moving forward, like getting out of it when like in these races, inevitably there's going to be a moment where everything is kind of just, it's ruined. It's like everything just feels like the world is against you. Like, do you have any strategies for that besides like just look at the cue sheets and keep on moving forward? Like, what does your mind sort of do in those environments?
You know, I think, you know, still like looking forward to the goal or the, like, I'm very like goal oriented or like focused on the destination. And so it's like, you know, I do, like, I am very analytical and like, I'm looking at the data and looking at the stats, but like, I also like, I think I really love backpack racing. I think because of the emotional experiences you get out there. And mm-hmm. so like, man, I'll have these like insane highs, you know, like one moment you are like on top of the world, you're feeling amazing. You're having this like incredible, like Zen moment. You've seen something beautiful, but it's funny. Like in the back of my head, every time I have a really high moment, I'm like, ooh, there's going to be a low that's going to be equally as extreme yeah. low end. And so I think it's just sort of like embrace those moments. It's like, you know, in the deepest, darkest moment, like, man, I'll cry. Like I cried like three of the days out there in Arkansas. Like I'll admit that I'm not ashamed of that. Like I get emotional, like I'll be laughing or whatever, you know. It's just like, so I think embrace, like, I think for me, like, yeah, there are some really like deep, hard moments of suffering maybe in the moment, or I hate to use that word, but, you know, some really big lows out there. But I think in the time, just like sort of like recognizing, well, I'm choosing to do this. I put myself here. Like, you know, this is going to pass, you know, the sun's going to come up, the bonk is going to pass. I'll eat something. It'll pull me out of it. So just sort of like look to like, you know, sort of that trajectory where you're going to like have a high, hopefully in the future. I don't know.
Yeah. So to wrap up yeah. this Arkansas experience, like, what was it like getting to Hot Springs? Was that like pure joy or was it relief? Like, thank God this is over. Like, talk me through that, you know, breaking the fastest known time.
You know, and actually, yeah. it was amazing. Like, it was, yeah, it was, that was really, yeah, super rewarding. Like, just an amazing experience. Like, it was, the last 2 days of the race were like, were really hard, man. I was really struggling. Like I was loving the scenery. I was loving everything about the weather was great. The bike was perfect, but like my body, my knees were like really hurting bad. And so I was really like struggling. Like, can I even do this? Can I finish? Can I like make it to the finish? And I was like, man, I think it was like just outside of Little Rock. I like sat down and was like, actually it was kind of ironic. My IT band flared up and sorry, I'm like backtracking a little bit for your question, but I'll get there. So my IT band flared up and I like sat down and I was like, I could barely like put weight on my right leg. And, I actually was like, remembered from one of your guys's podcasts. I think your IT band might've flared up in the Arkansas High Country. Was it yours?
Ezra? I have not had IT band issues your buddy? Since anyway. 10th grade running.
Okay. I think it was. Yeah. Okay. Somebody you interviewed in your podcast by the Arkansas High Country and they rotated their cleat and was able to take a brush with our IT band. And so like, I did that. I had a buddy who can give me the same tip. And so I, anyway, made some fit adjustments on the fly and was able to get my IT band back under control. And
nice.
You know, and it was, so just like getting to the finish was like such a relief, and to like, you know, have this goal that you didn't know if you'd be able to like accomplish, and then to like actually pull it off and to be able to, you know, complete something that you, you know, work so hard towards, you know, doing was just, I don't know, it was just like a really, really incredible experience. And like, most races when I'm finishing or as I'm like getting towards the end, I'm like, I never want to do this again. I never want to, you know, and then of course you finish and then you're like a week later, you're like, oh, I'm going back. I'm gonna do that again. Mm-hmm. I'd say like in Arkansas, I was like, even like the last, you know, 50, 60 miles coming through the flat side wilderness, I was just like, man, this was like such an amazing place to ride. Like such an incredible experience. I was like, I want to do this again. You know, so as I was like coming to the finish line, I was like so grateful that I, you know, complete the race, you know, accomplish my goal. And then I was like, I really want to do this again. And you know, then coming to the finish line was like, you know, I have to give credit to the organizers, like for making the finish something special. You know, they had like some spectators there. You know, Chuck was there with a bottle of champagne, and like it was just so cool to like actually finish and like have people like cheering for you. Like,
yeah.
You know, I finished TNGA in August and like got to the finish line at midnight, like pitch black, you know, not a soul there, like laid in the ground, mm-hmm. like just like crashed, you know, sort of rolling mm-hmm. the hot springs, like in the daylight with like my dad was there and like people
were cool. Cheering,
and like it like sprayed a champagne was like, wow, this is really cool. Like it felt surreal. It was, you know, a really, I guess, an amazing experience that I'm just like, yeah, so grateful for that. I was like, you know, able to like be there and like, you know, people that organized the race, that it was like, yeah, the finish and the event was like something that was, yeah, really, yeah, just really special.
Nice, man. As far as the riding itself, just because I ride here all the time, I'm just curious. So earlier on in day one, you're every once in a while, you'd be like, hey, how does this kind of compare to the overall chunkiness of like as chunky as it gets? And I'll be like, oh, this is, you know, this is like a 3 out of 10 right now. And you're like, okay, okay. And then every once in a while, I'd be like, okay, well, how about that? And I'll be like, maybe like a 5.5. The like when you really got in it and you're like, okay, I'm definitely doing the stuff right now. How did that compare to, you know, some stuff in Georgia, Tour Divide, where you ride? Dude. How would you describe that to someone? Like, yeah. When you're really in it, how would you describe that?
First of all, I want to say your rating system was spot on. It was so helpful. I love that.
Man.
I was like, because, you know, like, you know, talking to people, like talking to you and like Ernie and everybody before the race, like I'd never been to Arkansas. So I had no idea like what to expect. Like you just don't know. Like when you haven't been in an area, like people say something's chunky, like, how chunky do they mean? Like, what's the frame of reference there?
Like, exactly.
And so, dude, like I, you know, I was like so glad, like talking to Ezra, like I'm glad I rode my hardtail mountain bike with suspension fork and 2.2 inch tires. Like, cause it was chunky. Like it was like way chunkier than the Tour Divide, you know? And like, you know, our George is different cause there was like 100 miles of single track, but
mm-hmm.
you know, I would say like, every bit as chunky. Like, I mean, I rode the same bike in Georgia as I did in Arkansas. I just switched handlebars, you know, just put drop bars on. And so, I mean, I was blown away like by the terrain. And it was like, you know, you look at the elevation profile and you're like, oh, those climbs are like, they're not huge. It's like little, like, you know, little zigzags.
400 feet here, 1,000 feet here, like, oh, 2 feet here.
But it's like, you know, death by 1,000 rollers, you know, death by 1,000 cuts. Like it was wild. I mean, it was legit. I think, is that Rebecca Rausch's comment? Like that was,
yeah, she did say,
like when she finished it. And, you know, I guess I was, even doing all my research, like I definitely underestimated like how rugged and how remote. I think that was what really shocked me the most, was like the remoteness of Arkansas. Like there were some stretches, some big pushes between resupplies, you know, like, I mean, I was carrying like 5,000-6,000 calories with me between every resupply, just because I didn't want to get caught, like ran out of food. And, you know, there were some areas with no water too, right? Like that's what really surprised me, is like, I guess in the fall, maybe it's been kind of a dry year or something, but there was mm-hmm. a lot of dry creeks that I was like hoping I could filter water from. And so I was just really, I guess, struck by like, I mean, in some respects, I feel like, you know, there's, you know, Arkansas is, you know, like a little bit gnarlier than a lot of the stretches of the Tour Divide. You know, I would say mile per mile, Arkansas was definitely harder than the Tour Divide for sure. Like, I mean, just way more climbing per mile. And as far as the surface, the terrain, like, yeah, definitely chunky.
You have one memorable stretch during that whole ride, as far as just the actual riding, you know, not necessarily the scenery or the people, but as far as just like, I'm an avid bike rider and this is like the most engaging portion to me. Do you have anything that really stands out?
Oh,
no, it's a big thing. It's a big route.
I don't know. Like, it's funny. I guess at the end, like coming through the Flatside Wilderness was amazing. Like that was just like, to have that at the end too, like was so special. Like it was just beautiful riding. Like I kind of was coming through there in the afternoon and like just all those rollers and like the descents and the punchy climbs, and you were just out mm-hmm. there, like 60 miles, I think, about between like the, you know, between the resupplies there, the remote section. And it was just, it was incredible. Like it was, I did not want it to end. Like on one hand, I was like, I don't know if I keep going. On the other hand, I was like, I just want to keep doing this all day long because it is so beautiful out here. And it was just like incredible. Yeah, that was an incredible experience. So
nice.
And there were so many other, like, and I think it felt like, you know, coming from the Ouachitas into the Ozarks, like the way that the terrain varied was so dramatic. Like it was just like you're riding in two different states or two different complete geographic regions. Like that was, I think, a really unique experience. Like getting to see those two different types of geography was really cool. Like, you know, and then the whole phrase, like where the mountains aren't high, but the valleys are deep. I think Chuck says that, like, that was so true, you know, like you're not climbing to these huge overlooks all the time, but man, you are descending into some deep valleys. And like, you just knew every time that you descended, there was going to be like a kicker on the other side, like a steep kicker. And so you're going to pay for that dearly, but
yeah,
a lot of good moments out there.
Really cool to hear, man.
So you set the fastest known time, 4 days, 10 hours, 8 minutes. Like, I'm curious, like, have you thought about like how much faster you think you could go? Like, is it possible to take another 10 hours and a few minutes to like get under that 4 day mark? Is that something that like excites you? Like, I'm curious. Okay.
Oh, it'll be done. Somebody will do it. I don't know if I can do it, but you know, I think in a perfect world, I think three pushes.
Okay.
You know, like it'll be the thing about like Arkansas with it changing the start city. It's like, whoa, that's like, so this year or this coming year being in Russellville, it's like changes everything, you know? And so like, I don't know, but like in my mind, like after having finished it, like, I think it could be done. I mean, I'm somebody like Sophie, I could probably do
it. And that's what Ernie said the year before. He's like, I think this can be done with no sleep. And that was like if there's someone who's able to do that, that would just be.
Yeah. But yeah, I think sub 4, 100%, it'll be done. I fully anticipate my time to be beat this year. Hopefully Ernie can go back out there and take it down.
Andrew, give it a proper shot.
Yeah. Ernie and I were sitting next to each other. We FaceTimed Abe while he was in the finish booth for a little bit, which was cool. And then we hung up after talking for a while. Then Ernie looks at me. He goes, nice. We got to start training, dude.
Yeah.
He's like, we're going next year. All three of us are going to race it and it's going to be sick. I'm like, Ernie, let's give it a minute. Like, I don't know. Maybe.
That would be amazing.
But it sounds like Ernie really wants to again.
That'd be so awesome. I'd love to see it.
It'd be cool.
I think there's time out there for sure. Like, but again, it like there's so many variables too, right? You know, so like this year we had perfect weather. I mean, it was no rain, like not a drop of rain, and like it got a little warm a couple of the afternoons, but I think weather is a huge variable, you know, and like how fast the surface was rolling fast. Like, you know, it was a lot of things are in my favor this year. So I think if that happens again, there's, you know, good conditions and I don't know. It'll be fun to see what can happen out there. It's just like the divide, right? Like Lachlan taking day and a half off the record, like, just unbelievable. Like watching the sport progress is like really fun to see. And it's awesome.
So as far as the Triple Crown, does Colorado Trail or Arizona Trail one call your name more than the other? If you can only do one next year, you know, if things work out well with,
I think Colorado Trail is maybe highest on my list for the coming year. You know, I really need to get some time at elevation, get some altitude experience. I'm a little nervous about it, but I think that's like probably the highest on my list right now. You know, then
such a badass route. Such a badass route.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Have you guys read any of that stuff?
I did a tiny bit. I had a friend doing it this past summer, Nate Griffey. Yeah. I went out there with him and I basically shuttled his vehicle from one end to the other. And I rode some sections. I hung out in Silverton and it blew me away. It was just, for me, that's one of the most appealing things you could possibly do in the United States on a bike.
Which is so hilarious that you say that, because it's a hiking trail. Like, it's so brutal. Like, the Colorado Trail is just brutal. It's like listening to Hannah Simon talk about her Triple Crown this past year and just like the vitriol people have towards the trail at certain points, because it's like your bike is on your back and you are hiking 2,000 feet up and over these ridiculous passes that it's just unlike anything else in any other bikepacking race. So
it's like an expedition. It's such an expedition. And it's like, ultimately you can go faster on a bike than by foot by bringing a bike. You know, a bike is a tool, but you're not using it the whole time.
You got to be prepared to hike. Yeah. And that's the cool thing about like Arkansas is like you ride the whole thing, right? Like,
yeah, for real, for real.
But yeah, Colorado would be a whole
lot. I love that you're wanting to lean more into single track. I would love to see more of those events popping up in general, or just like more people showing up to that style of event, because I just think it's really damn cool.
It is. Well, that's the thing about biking, right? There's so many ways to have fun. I mean, there's so many different types and flavors, and it's just like we're so fortunate to have all these cool events and routes that are being developed and being put out there. And it's just, there's a lot of amazing places to explore and see. Right. And like, that's what I'm so grateful for. Like having discovered this sport or this activity, you know, it's just like the amazing places that I've gotten to visit and see. I'm so grateful for that. Yeah.
Just kind of wrapping up here. I'm curious about like the scene in Virginia. Like you've got a few races there, like out West, it's almost like bike packing is very much on the rise. Like, do you feel like it's on the rise on the East Coast, like with races? Because I feel like there's not as many.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, big race. Yeah, you're right. There's not as many big races here, but it's like, you know, in Virginia, we got Trans Virginia, which is a big gravel race, you know, it traverses 560 miles across the state. I mean, there are some remote sections of, there's some chunk and some gnar on that one. I highly encourage anybody to come check that out. And then we got Rockstar Trail, kind of our mountain bike race, local one. You know, I'd say, and like Pennsylvania, I think there's some routes that are being developed in Pennsylvania. There's like the Endless Mountains route that's, I think, coming up this coming year. And, you know, there's TNGA and Cohuttacat. And, you know, there's like a lot of smaller events that I think are, I think on the rise. And there's not a lot of folks, I think, here in Virginia that are doing a lot of these events. But I think it's definitely something that's like gaining in popularity. So, you know, one thing in the Shenandoah Valley, I think, has been really, there's a lot of cyclists here, a lot of mountain biking that goes on. You know, we have the big 100-mile race here locally. And so this is a lot of different types of riders. And I think it'll be interesting to see where things go in the future, like how these events develop. And I'd love to see more people come into our events here in the East Coast. It's like, I think there's just so many routes that are out there, so many beautiful places to see. Like sometimes people kind of like overlook some of these places that are more local and maybe not quite as dramatic as like Colorado or Arkansas or like the Tour Divide, but there's really cool places to see all over the country. So who knows?
Nice.
The Arkansas visitor bureau just got very excited that you included Arkansas on that. They've spent the past 15 years trying to get up on that status, and they're finally there. Arkansas is a destination for epic riding.
It's
good work, Andrew. Good work.
For sure. 100%.
It's getting there. Yeah. Well, Kurt Refsnyder, he just visited recently, and he's doing some bike packing routes in Northwest Arkansas that's going to be through bike packing routes. I think we're going to see more and more in Northwest Arkansas. It's cool. I ride with him for a couple days, and he said it's some of the best gravel he's ever seen. Mm. You know, he loves single track. He doesn't care too much for gravel, but after riding 2 days of it, he's like, okay, man, this is probably the best gravel I've ever seen. So that was really cool.
That's awesome.
Because he's ridden a lot of places for sure.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get back there.
Nice, man. I need to get you deep in the Ozarks and whenever your hand's doing all right, ride this Doom route, man. I think you'd like it a lot.
I so badly want to do that. And I'm so sad I probably miss it this coming year, but hopefully 2025.
That'd be really fun. Yeah. So going into next year, what's two things you're changing? One with your training and one with your equipment.
Ooh, good question. Training. Ooh, I want to do more stuff off the bike.
Okay.
Yeah. I've realized in the last 3 years, as Ezra mentioned, my Strava numbers are just like all bikes all the time. And, you know, I think I need to build in some more resilience in my body. You know, like I've had some trouble with my hands and my knees. And so I want to do more hiking, more running. And so I think just do more cross training, you know, like I don't need to always be pounding out hard miles on the bike. Like let's go do some hikes or some trail runs or like do a little bit of gym work, like just be more fit and stronger overall. So that'd be the, cool. I think one thing I'd be changing about my training.
Okay.
And the bike, I guess, would be to ride my full suspension mountain bike more.
Nice. Okay. I like it.
Mountain biking. So yeah.
Cool.
Did that. Yeah.
Two great answers. I like it.
Well, that's all I've got. Andrew, you got anything? Abe, anything we missed that you want to talk about today?
No, awesome. I think you covered it. Yeah, I had a great time.
No, this was great. Oh, this was really
appreciate
good.
It. I was looking forward to this all week. So I really
appreciate
to be here, and can't wait to see you guys both in person. Hope we get to race together sometime. And
that'd be a blast.
Yeah.
I'd love to be on the same route as you. It was really hard. I'm not going to lie, man. I was tempted to turn north.
Oh, you should have come. That would have been amazing.
Part of it was like, you know, it was last minute and I had work and everything. And I was like, man, I didn't bring a sleep kit at all. But like, if there was any moment to like pull the best out of myself, it would have been trying to ride with you. Like your energy, the way you were carrying yourself through that route and like how strong you're riding in the conditions. That was something really special to witness. So
yeah,
like,
it was fun racing with
major hats off to you, man. That's very early on day one. I was like, this is the strongest guy here. And as long as nothing goes terribly wrong and he can stay awake, then this guy is going to get the FKT. So it was really cool.
Appreciate your confidence. Yeah.
Come to fruition. Yeah.
Abe, thanks for doing this. Andrew, thanks for being here. This has been episode 30 of the Bike Pack Racing Podcast. Thanks for listening.